Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, your live connection to the information for a healthy body, an enlightened mind, and a renewed spirit.
Hello, and welcome to today's inspiration. I'm Lisa Berry, and I'm very grateful you are listening today. This is a show about self-awareness, self-empowerment, self-improvement, learning to love yourself, and using what you know to live a happy and balanced life. I've been through a lot in my life, and I choose happiness. I work on it, at least, and I do believe it's a choice. I wake up every day anticipating something exciting and hoping for the best and looking for and expecting great things to happen. I can find humor in almost every situation, so I try to laugh a lot, which has been proven to be good for your health, and I am all about love. I do this show, and I feel like I'm on this planet to share the light from my loving heart. I'm a radio broadcaster. That's been my career for many years, and I love connecting and informing and entertaining listeners like you. But I found my greatest strength is I have a large capacity to love. And I want to share that with you and help you realize how short and precious life really is and why we shouldn't waste it in angst and anger. So who better to have on a show about love than the Love Doctor, right? Dr. Terry Orbach is a Detroit area professor, therapist, research scientist, and author of 5 best-selling books. She is one of America's most trusted relationship experts, and we are honored and delighted she has agreed to join us on the show today. Welcome, Dr. Orbach. Are you there?
I'm there. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. How are you doing?
Yay. I am great, Lisa. How are you?
I am great, and I'm just honored and delighted that you agreed to join us on today's inspiration today. I don't know if it's a girl thing, but I love talking about relationships. I could talk about them all day long because, to me, having a good relationship is what life is all about, but they're certainly not easy, and I think talking about things usually improves them. So let's start with the basics. What is important to having a good relationship?
Well, first I want to say, Lisa, that I agree with you. Relationships are so important, not only for our psychological and emotional well-being, but for our physical well-being as well. We are less likely to be depressed and anxious when we're happy in our relationships, and we're more likely to feel better physically. We're more likely to exercise, have less headaches, sleep better, and less likely to have colds and flus. I have been studying relationships for the past almost 3 decades. I've been following the same couples now for over 28 years, trying to figure out that exact question that you just asked me, what keeps people together and happy, and what breaks people apart. The first thing that I have found that's so important is that we need to be having realistic expectations. We need to know the real things about relationships instead of those myths and common sense notions that I think we all believe and we've learned from our families and friends. Because when we have unrealistic expectations, we believe those myths out there, we're more likely to get frustrated. So when we think something should happen, and we all have those should statements in our head, and then the realities of relationships don't occur, we feel frustrated and disappointed. And that's the number one thing, Lisa, that tears apart relationships and breaks apart that happiness that we feel in a relationship. For example, many of us think that a perfect relationship is one with no conflict. And so then when we do disagree with our partner, and that's inevitable, I think all relationships have conflict, so that if we think there shouldn't be conflict and then there is, we feel disappointed and frustrated, and then we're less happy, and our relationship is more likely to break up.
So it's not like it is in the movies? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yes, exactly, Lisa. It's not like it is in the movies where everybody gets along and we're always happy and we always agree on things. I mean, as a woman, I really want my husband to agree with everything that I think and feel. Unfortunately, he comes from a different family. I mean, that's not unfortunately, but he comes from a different family. He comes from a different state, and unfortunately, he's not going to agree with everything that I think and feel.
Well, can't people just be nice? I'm right in this category, so of course you've hit the nail right on the head right out of the gate here. I'm not comfortable with conflict, and it's not like my relationships suffer because there is it, but I don't like it. I just want everyone to be nice and happy and enjoy themselves. Is that unrealistic?
I agree. I think it's unrealistic, and especially women. We don't like conflict. We don't like disagreement. And what I found in my long-term study is that as women, we hold on to a disagreement or an argument that we have with our partner for at least 2 to 3 days.
Yeah, at least. At least.
At least.
Yeah.
You know, so we have a disagreement with our partner, and then we come home or we go to work, and we think about it, and we analyze it, and we think about it some more, and then we might get online and look the topic up. We might read a book about it, but we actually, for a better word, obsess over that disagreement. And that's true with our love relationships, whether it be our romantic relationships, our friendships, our relationships with our children.
Siblings?
We think about it. Siblings, absolutely. And we can't let it go. And one of the things that's fascinating to me is that what I've been studying these couples, what we do is we talk to the husbands and we talk to the wives separately. And we ask 3 questions, Lisa. We ask, what was the last conflict topic that you had with your spouse? When was it? And did it get resolved or was it settled? And so we talk to the husbands first, and the husbands actually have a difficult time thinking about, when was that last conflict or disagreement that I had with my spouse? Well, oh, maybe it was, you know, a few days ago, and it was about, oh, who should let the dogs out or who should take the garbage out? But the husbands say, the topic was resolved or the conflict disagreement was resolved. Then the husband goes out, the wife of that husband comes in, and she has the same 3 questions. She says, yesterday at 2 p.m., he said this, I said that, and it has not been resolved. I'm still thinking about it. I don't know why he said that. I can't figure out why we are arguing about it. I thought it was resolved. So that as women, we really remember our conflicts. We do have a difficult time with conflict, just like you said, Lisa, and it doesn't get resolved very easily. Men compartmentalize when they have the conflict or disagreement. When it's done, it's over. So that when we go back to them the next day or 2 days later and we say, honey, can we talk about what we were arguing about the other day? He says, oh, what were we talking about? What were we, disagreeing about? And so then we get upset because we infer or we interpret that it wasn't important to him when the meaning of conflict or disagreements are different for men and women.
But what about resolving that conflict? I can say that I've had a situation and I've brought it up and have been told, oh, you're still thinking about that? That was several days ago. But in my mind, it wasn't resolved. So, but in his mind, it's like over. That was 2 days ago and it's not even relevant anymore. But is it important to resolve those conflicts so you can let go or just let them go and get over it?
Well, absolutely. I think it is important to resolve conflict or disagreements. Yes, women need to let go a little bit sooner and more often, but we do need to resolve the conflict. And what I think is the most important thing to remember is that we need to understand our partner's perspective. We infer or we think that our partner thinks about things exactly as we do, and that's not the case. As I mentioned before, we're all from different families, backgrounds, religions perhaps, and we have different perspectives on things, issues,
absolutely,
topics. Mm-hmm. And so that understanding that our partner is thinking about something differently than I or we do is very important. Then I think it's important to understand that the best situation to resolve conflict is when you're calm. you know, when we are upset and irritated, when we're angry, and when we're letting our emotions rule the situation, we can't resolve conflict very well. We're much more likely to say or do something we regret. So I always encourage people to take a break. Be sure to tell your partner, I need 30 minutes, I need an hour to be calm, to walk around the block, to go get a glass of water downstairs. But it's okay to tell our partner, you know what, I need a break. I will be back in seconds or minutes, I say, and not hours, but seconds or minutes, and then come back when we're a little bit more calm. It's okay actually as well to sleep on something, sleep on it, and come back to the topic in the morning. Now, for men, they resolve conflict side to side very well, so that when we're side to side, walking around the block, taking a hike, going to the mall, anything that's side by side, they're really good at resolving conflict. Women, on the other hand, are good at resolving conflict face to face. So sitting across from one another, talking to one another is really good for women. So understanding, again, that the situation can be very different for men versus women, and that the best situation is different, is also understanding our partner's perspective. Then I think it's important to understand that you want to use your I language rather than your you language. Anytime someone says, you did that, or you are this, we get defensive and we withdraw. And so taking responsibility over our own feelings and our own issues, using our I language, I'm uncomfortable when you talk to my mother last night like that, or I feel anxious when you throw your clothes on the floor or when you don't put the dishes in the dishwasher, is a different conversation, and it's much more likely to get resolved.
So when you say side by side, you mean literally, like men would rather discuss something not across the table, but like, as you said, out and about, or I like to trap them in the car, then they can't get out. But they are side by side. So
side by side.
Yeah.
And yes, I mean literally side by side.
Okay. I think men look at everything as a problem to be solved. And like, if you have a hard day or you're mad at somebody else and you talk to your husband and you go for comfort and understanding, they immediately want to fix the problem, and you just want someone to be on your side. Do you think that's a typical situation?
That is such a very common situation, Lisa. And that's because, again, men and women give support very differently. As you said, and what I have found in my study, is that men, when there's an issue, like to fix it. They right. think it's a problem, and they give what I call advice or instrumental support. So they give advice, they give a solution to your problem. Women, on the other hand, want and are really good at giving what I call emotional support. They listen. We want someone to listen. We want someone just to empathize and to say, oh, Lisa, that sounds so difficult. Oh, I don't know what I would do in that situation. Wow, that is hard. So for men who are listening, listen, shake your head up and down and say, wow, that sounds hard. That's all we as women want.
Exactly.
We want someone there and to understand our perspective. We don't need it to be solved or fixed.
Can you convince a man that that's the way to go, or are they just wired that way and that's pretty, it's up to us to understand that's just how it's going to go? Can a man change?
I think a man can change, absolutely. I think for him to understand that all he has to do is shake his head up and down, look at a woman and say, wow, that's hard, I think he can change. But as women, I think we also need to change. Men want problems solved. So when he comes to us after an issue at work and says, I don't know what to do with my boss, I'm having an issue at work, they don't want empathy. they don't want us to shake our heads and say, wow, honey, that's so difficult. That's not what they want. They have the same frustration and disappointment. When we give emotional support, they want the problem solved, fixed. They want it out of their minds very quickly. So we need to understand that we also need to help them fix the problem. They want advice. They want solutions. Not the solution, by the way, but solutions to help them fix the problem. They don't want us to say, oh, that sounds hard. I understand. That is not what they want either.
Well, do they want to talk it out? I mean, I love talking. I could talk. I think that is a key to solving a lot of situations. Let's talk it out. Do men want to talk about it, or do they just want to air it and fix it?
They just want to air it and fix it, Lisa. Men really don't like relationship talk, or the solution to fixing a problem is not talk for them. We as women love talk. It's rewarding. It's reinforcing. I always, when I'm talking to a man or a husband, I say talk is like an aphrodisiac to women. We become sexual. We become attracted to you. We care about you more. We love you more when you do talk. So if you're looking for us to be more attracted to you, if you're looking for us to feel sexual desire, then talking to us is the way to go. But if you have a problem and you want to resolve that problem, talk is not what you want. And as women, we need to understand that. They want to air the situation, air the issue, air the topic, air the problem, and then help us or help you fix it.
Some great information. We're talking to the Love Doctor, Dr. Terry Orbach, a relationship specialist in the Detroit area. And like you said, I have come to learn that life is all about perspective. Everybody sees things differently. So when I think about that, I actually think it's a miracle that anyone gets along, because we all see things so differently. I mean, is there any common ground, or is it just the challenge that I'm thinking it is?
I think there is common ground, Lisa, but it's called compromise, and it's called taking the perspective of the other person or the other partner to try to really understand. I do think communication is key and is the second really important thing to a happy, healthy relationship, but it's not what people think. When I talk to couples, not only in my study, but in counseling and workshops, most couples think they're talking to one another. But what they're really doing is what I call maintaining the household. They're talking about who will do the grocery shopping, who's going to call mom, who's going to help the kids, and who's going to pay the bills. To me, that is not communication. Communication is really talking about your dreams, your goals, your aspirations. That's what communication is. It's what you did at the beginning of your relationship. In that first year, you were asking questions about, if you won the lottery, what would you do with that money? Where would you travel to? What do you think about politics, movies, music? That's communication. But what happens to couples over time is that they get stressed, and a lot of things happen. We begin working, having kids, paying bills, and we get stressed. So we put our relationship on the back burner, and we deal with everything else. So we talk to one another. We speak to one another. But it's not about the important things that really matter and that keep a relationship together. So what I encourage couples to do is to take their relationship off the back burner and begin to ask questions and have the conversations like they used to when they first met and were dating. I call it the 10-minute rule. So what you want to do is practice the 10-minute rule every single day. Talk about something other than these four topics, Lisa. Work, kids, who's going to do what around the house, or your relationship. So you should not talk talk about those four topics for 10 minutes every single day. Now, lots of people say, oh, no, what am I going to talk about, right? I haven't been talking about other things for a long period of time, and that's very common. And other couples say, oh, that's easy. I can talk about other things for more than 10 minutes. I would like to challenge couples who are listening to do it for at least 2 weeks, 10 minutes every single day. It's not as easy as people think, but it will transform your relationship. You will begin to talk about the deeper, intimate things of each other. You will get to know each other again, and you will truly begin to understand your partner. In my long-term study, that's what the happy couples over 28 years said. I began to know my partner again. I began to talk about the things that were exciting, like at the beginning of my relationship.
I took a marriage and family class in college, and I'll never forget this. The professor told us that a good marriage is based on open and honest communication. So that sounds like exactly what you're telling us. But it also sounds like a lot of work. So is work a good or bad word to assign to a relationship? Are good relationships work, effort, just devotion? How would you describe what you're telling us that we should be doing?
I think happy relationships should not be hard work, Lisa. I think instead it takes consistent work, but they're really small changes, not hard work. So what I found is that among the happy couples in my long-term study, as well as the couples in workshops, I found that all you have to do is make small changes in your behaviors and attitudes. So, for example, it's only 10 minutes every single day talking about something other than those four topics. That's not hard work. It's consistent attention. The other thing I found is that what you want to do is give your partner what I call affirmation every single day. So you want to do something small or say something short to your partner every single day. Again, that's not hard work, Lisa. It's consistent work. So every single day you want to wake up and say, thank you. I love you. You're the best father. You're my best friend. You're great at X. Those are simple phrases, Lisa. You need only to say one of them every single day to make your partner feel special, loved, and cared for. Because what I found is that people feel, after a long period of time in a relationship, and a long period of time, maybe 3, 5, 10, 50 years of being with one another, but they feel like they're being taken for granted.
Exactly.
But if you can wake up and say that phrase every single day or do something like turn on the coffee pot in the morning because you know your partner needs caffeine to wake up, bring the newspaper in, make their favorite dessert, put gas in their car, whatever, make a phone call, text them once a day. Any small gesture will make them feel noticed. And we do not want to feel like we're being taken for granted. Because when we feel that way, we don't feel special. We don't feel loved. We don't feel cared for. And then we look elsewhere to make us feel special. Now, I found in my study, Lisa, that that's even more important for men than it is for women. Now, as women, we also need to feel like we're special and cared for, but we're fortunate. We're lucky, Lisa. We get it from a lot of other people in our lives, whether it be our sisters, our best friends, our children, even the stranger when I walk into the coffee shop and says, Terry, I love your new haircut. That's affirmation. It makes us feel special. Unfortunately, men don't get that from other people in their lives, like women. So it's even more important that as a partner, as a wife, we make them feel special. Because again, it's just these small changes that are important to make people happy and feel like they're not being taken for granted.
I think that is one of the biggest problems, feeling taken for granted. But you, I love what you're saying, but women probably don't think about that. Women are all over each other, but men go out in the world, and no one's going to say, hey, cute outfit. In fact, men get mad at them.
Exactly.
Outfit. This is not an outfit. This is my golfing look, you know. But everybody just wants attention and affection and affirmation. And why would you take the person you chose to spend your life with so for granted and not give them that? And I love how you point out that men need it more than women. I don't think that's something that we think about. One thing that I really think about a lot is, and I can't wait to hear your take on this, is I think every relationship is good when it's new, whether it's a sweater or a coworker or a new purse or a lover. I mean, when you get it and it's new, it's special. But then like 3 weeks later, you're throwing the purse on the floor or the sweater's not getting hung up, or I'm just using objects, merging into relationships, because if we do it with that, we're certainly doing it with people. And how do you, I know you just said about the affirmations, but is that practical? How do you not take each other for granted? I think that's the biggest problem of all.
Well, I think the biggest problem of all, absolutely, is the lack of affirmation. And so that we really need to give that affirmation to our partner every single day. So if you can think about waking up and saying or doing something small every single day to your partner, then you will show them that you don't take them for granted. But I think the purse thing, a new purse, a new object, everything being exciting when it's new, is a little bit different, Lisa. I totally agree with you. When something is new, different, and the unknown, it's exciting. And we can generalize that to our relationships. What we can say is that excitement is based on three things. It's based on newness, it's based on being different or surprising, and it's based on three, arousal. So what we need to do is add those three elements to our relationship over time. So if you can, think about doing something new with your partner often. So instead of, for example, going to a restaurant and a movie on date night, or doing the same things for dinner in the house all the time, try something new with your partner. Take a new class, go to a new restaurant. Instead of going to the same vacation spot, try something new. Try a new bottle of wine, a new food, anything new. As long as it's done with your partner, will add excitement and add a little romance and passion. And that's scientifically true. Second, you want to add a little mystery. Use the element of surprise. Because again, at the beginning of your relationship, just like with the new purse, the new outfit, the new golf clubs, anything that's surprising, mysterious, that you don't know about, just like at the beginning of your relationship, if you do it over time with your partner, will again add excitement, passion, and mystery. So show up at your partner's work and take them out to lunch. Put a note in their briefcase. Send them a flirty text message. Send them a greeting card. And by the way, we don't send our partner greeting cards anymore or give them greeting cards anymore. And people love that, by the way, where you actually handwrite a message. So anything with surprise and mystery will, again, be exciting and romantic and passionate. And the third and final thing that you want to do is use the element of arousal. And this is clean. So if people are turning off because they think it's going to be something sexual, it's not.
Right. Okay.
Anything that produces that adrenaline rush, that produces that arousal, and it can be exercising with your partner, going to a scary movie, going to an amusement park and riding a roller coaster ride, anything that produces arousal or adrenaline, and as long as you do it with your partner, the arousal that's produced through that other activity can get transferred to your partner in your relationship. So, and again, that is scientifically supported with my own research and the research of others. So those are three things, easy, simple, that you can do with your partner that will mirror the beginnings of your relationship and will add the excitement, will add the mystery, will add the passion, and show your partner that you don't take them for granted, but that you see them and you notice them.
I think that's great advice, excitement, passion, and mystery. And I like how you say mirror the beginning of your relationship, because it seems so cliche now. People get married, then they have kids, and then they end up hating each other. I mean, it's just you get caught up in the day-to-day work, and you've got the kids, and it's me first, and it just becomes a competition. How does that happen? How does a relationship become a competition with each other, and how do you avoid that?
I think because, Lisa, we forget that our relationship needs consistent attention. And I think this is a natural thing that most people do. They say, my partner knows I care about them. My partner knows that I'm busy. As soon as the kids are older or the deadline at work is over or I take care of mom or dad, I will attend to my relationship. But what happens really is that we just go to the next thing. We go to the next stressor, the thing that seems to be more important. But if we want that competition not to occur, if we want our partner to really know that he or she is important, that our relationship is a priority to us, we need to show or tell our partner. And again, we don't do that. We attend to everything else that's going on except our relationship. So it doesn't need to be like we have to go on a date night every week or we need to spend hours with our partner every week in order for them to feel important. It just takes some little things, simple, easy things to show our partner. So what I like to ask people to do is ask themselves, do you remember what your partner was wearing this morning before you left for work or before they left for work? If you can't remember what your partner was wearing when they left for work or you did, then you are rushing too much. You're not stopping, breathing, and noticing your partner. And my guess is, Lisa, that more than half of the listeners cannot remember what their partner was wearing this morning. It's hard. We're rushing.
Yeah.
We're stressed. We don't look at our partner, breathe, watch, notice, and tell them something every single morning.
We're talking to the love doctor, Dr. Terry Orbach, who authored books, has done a PBS special, and she's also been involved in a very interesting research project. She's studied the same 373 couples for over 28 years. It's the longest-running study of its kind in the U.S. and has found out some very interesting, helpful advice she's giving us today. But one question I have is, have you studied these couples or couples in general? People change. People change. When I got married, our minister did a ceremony and said, you're really marrying five people because your spouse is going to change five. And I was young. What did I know? But he was right. So in this study or what you've seen in your teaching and therapy, do people change? And how do you deal with that in a relationship?
Yes, people do change, Lisa. What I found from these 373 couples, and by the way, 46% of these couples divorced over the last 28 years, and that's exactly the national average. The national average in about 2014 is 45%. The national average was 66% in the 80s, 50% in the 90s, and has decreased significantly since the mid-1980s. But what I have found is, just as you said, people do change. And what we need to do is be ready for that change. Expect that change. When we think that change should not occur, that's when we get frustrated again, and that frustration eats away at our happiness. So we need to communicate. We need to check in and do a tune-up with our partner at least every 6 months. And what does that mean? I mean, it's just like a car tune-up. We need to sit down and ask the difficult questions again. What do you think about this? And there are five topics that are really important. What do you think about the importance of religion? What's your approach to money? And what do you want to do about saving and spending? What's your approach or meaning about family and children and friends and the importance of all that? Lifestyle kinds of things in terms of what we want to do with our life now and in the future. And then finally about health, fitness, food, nutrition. We want to just sit down and talk and ask questions. Don't assume we know what our partner feels or thinks. Don't mind read. And that really can tear couples apart. I know what my partner thinks or feels. I don't need to ask these questions. So sit down every 6 months and do a tune-up so that you can be ready for change and that you'll see the small changes that occur in you. And that's important. Change is going to occur within you as well as your partner.
What if your partner changes and you have less in common and you are growing apart? Is there hope? I mean, or is that just why we have a divorce rate?
Well, I think there's a divorce rate because people don't sit down and talk about the difficult things. They don't have realistic expectations about change and compromise and conflict resolution. I think when people sit down and they have changed, and we are different, and by the way, even when we start out in a relationship, we are different. But at the beginning of a relationship, we find the common ground. It's easier to find the common ground because we're in the throes of passion and excitement. It's more difficult when the passion declines and when the excitement declines. So when you're sitting down and you find out that your partner has changed and you have less in common, find the common ground. Find what works. Strengthen what's already going well rather than, and this is what I found that I think is different from most relationship experts. What I found is that happy couples don't focus on the problems, don't try to fix what's going not so well, but instead focus on what's going well. Strengthen what's already working for them. Write down a list of the positive things in your relationship, the things that you love about your partner, the things that are going well in your relationship, and then add more positive things to your relationship. When you focus on what's going well, you rub off. That positive approach rubs off on your partner. You're motivated to move forward together as a team. And then after you have this positive approach, it's so much easier to deal with the costs and the disagreements and the differences. And again, All couples have those disagreements. All couples have those differences. But if you can focus on what's going well, add positivity to your relationship, then working on the differences and trying to compromise is so much easier. And by the way, Lisa, whenever I say compromise to couples, they hate that word because when people hear compromise, they think, oh, no, I'm going to have to give something up. I'm not going to be able to be who I am, and I'm not going to be able to think the way I want to think. What I would like people to do, couples to do, is to renegotiate that word. Instead, compromise can mean different things. It does not have to mean giving something up, not being yourself. Compromise can mean coming in the middle and you doing a little bit of what you want and a little bit of what your partner wants. It can mean doing what your partner wants for 3 months and then doing what you want for 3 months. Or it can be really exciting, fresh, new idea. That's a third idea that's fun and different and totally what both of you could be doing that is outside of what you normally do or want or think, but is fun and different, and this different, cool, new option. So instead of thinking of change as negative or compromise as negative, we want to have a different meaning. Change is good. Change is positive.
And I like your positive approach. And to me, compromise is same in relationships as when you have kids. It means thinking of others. It shouldn't always be about yourself. I mean, you are in a relationship and you have children and now you are thinking of others. To me, that's what it means. My next question, I got an email. I've been promoting the show and I got an email. And my question is, what is the basis of a good relationship? How do you know it will work? And that's basically what I'm thinking. I'm hearing from Sarah in Canton, Michigan, who asks, can a relationship be built or is it love at first sight? She said, I was friends with a guy who at first didn't really like me, but now we are having a serious relationship and talking about a future together. And I wonder, does love build over time and what is the prognosis for our future? So thank you, Sarah, for that email. And what do you think, Dr. Orbach?
Well, first, I also want to thank Sarah. It's a very good question, Lisa. I think there are two types of love, two types of relationships. There's the love at the beginning, which is built on attraction and chemistry and love at first sight, but that's not the love that keeps relationships together over the long haul. It's exciting, and we all love those kinds of relationships and love, but the love that keeps people together is the love that Sarah's having with this other person. It's the love where you do get to know someone. It's called companionate love. It's the love that builds over time. It's the love that you build on support and getting to know them and friendship. And that's the love that keeps couples together. Because yes, chemistry is very important. Passion, excitement is important. And when you have that companionate love, that love of friendship and intimacy and support, you do want to infuse it, to reignite it with the passion that is that excitement. But that doesn't last, even when you reignite it over time. So I think, Sarah, the prognosis is good. You want to continue to get to know one another. Don't take each other for granted. And continue to ask the questions that you used to at the beginning when you were, quote, just friends, or as you're beginning to get to know one another over time. Don't forget those questions and continue to get to know one another 10, 50 years from now.
How do people know it's right for them to get married? I have a whole bunch of thoughts on marriage. So let's start with the basics. How do you know you should marry someone?
I think there are three questions, Lisa, that you ask yourself before you get married or in order to understand whether this person is the right one. The first question is, are you similar and underlying attitudes and attitudes and values. So those important things, importance of religion, the importance, and by the way, it's not religious affiliation, but the importance of religion, your approach to money, and your approach to family and children. So are you similar? Because when you're not similar, you're much more likely to not resolve conflict over time. Number two, how do you resolve conflict? Couples who resolve conflict well, constructively, rather than destructively, where you're yelling and leaving the room, stonewalling, which means, you know, not even talking to this person, just ignoring them. When you don't resolve conflict well, that is not predictive of longevity over time. So how do you resolve conflict? Think about your last disagreement. Did it go well? And by the way, you're going to have conflict. It's going to be hard to resolve the conflict. But as you're doing it, do you resolve that disagreement well? And the third question you want to ask yourself is, do you trust this person? Trust is the number one and essential part of a happy, healthy relationship. And in fact, in my long-term study, 94% of the husbands and 98% of the wives said that trust was the number one rule, deal breaker, if it wasn't there, to an important, happy, healthy relationship. And trust is when that person has your back, when they won't hurt or deceive you, when they're honest, predictable, and they have your best interests at heart. So you want to have what I call a trust chat. See if you trust your partner and if your partner trusts you.
I love that. That person has your back. Isn't that kind of what we all want to feel in all of
we
our
do.
Relationships? Yeah. All right, I'm going to ask you a very non- Yes, I'm going to ask you a very non-scientific question. You see, and I try not to be a judger, but we've all seen it. You see an older man with a younger woman. She's way more attractive. He's got a lot of money. Is the guy kidding himself, or what is he getting out of that? Is it just making him feel better? I mean, to me, love, a marriage is such a serious bond and commitment, and you should have all these things that you just told us you should have, but yet you see these relationships, and who am I to judge? Maybe they do trust each other and have it all worked out, but sometimes you just wonder, are some people kidding themselves when they get married? Or is that mean for me to ask?
No, not at all. I think it's a typical question. It's a common question, Lisa. I think relationships are give and take, and that we all give and take different things in a relationship so that we all have strengths and we all have weaknesses. And what we want is that our partner helps us in those weaknesses and then has strengths as well, that we have strengths that we bring to a relationship. Now, I have to say, Lisa, that, you know, age isn't always biological age. You know, it really is maturity. It really is emotional age that's important. And some people, even though they're young in chronological or biological age, are mature emotionally and psychologically. So one of the things we want to remember is that it's not chronological age and that everyone brings strengths and weaknesses. So when we do see a couple where there is that older man and a younger woman, we want to think about that she must be bringing something to the relationship. Now, she may bring status. She may fill his ego. She may bring something that we as an individual might not feel is important. And you're not alone, Lisa, in thinking that that's not what I would want, right, in a relationship. But for some older men, for some people in general, that's what they need. Their weakness is that they don't feel good about themselves. They may feel good in the workplace. They may feel good because of how much money they're making, but they're not feeling good in other areas of their life. Now, having said that and having said that we need to be cautious about biological and chronological age and that we all bring strengths and weaknesses, those two individuals, older man, younger woman, are not probably going to have similarity in underlying values and attitudes. And so my prediction with that couple would be is that they're going to have conflict over time about some important things in life, about what they want in terms of children and family, for example, or what they want to do in terms of leisure activities or vacation spots, or what they want to do after perhaps he retires or gets older, or about illness and health. And so I caution the couple, older man, younger woman, or older woman and younger man, that you need to have those discussions, because otherwise, over time, you're going to have a lot of disagreements and conflict, which is going to break you up because you're not going to be able to resolve them effectively.
Very nicely put. did you see the new report came out this week from the Urban Institute that millennials are not getting married? They say the percentage who will be unmarried by the time they hit age 40 could be as high as 30%. And, of course, that's an increase. 70% will still get married, but that's well below the marriage rates for early baby boomers. That was 91%, late boomers 87%, Gen Xers 82%. Here you are. I'm talking to Dr. Terry Auerbach, the love doctor, researcher, author, PBS special host. Do you believe in marriage? Do you think it's still a good idea?
I believe that long-term relationships, Lisa, are important and vital, essential for our health and well-being. Having said that, a long-term relationship does not need to be marriage. I think it's an individual decision. If you want children, if you want the, quote, traditional family, then marriage affords you opportunities and things that may be important for your children and for you. But if you are wanting a happy, healthy, long-term relationship, and you still want children, and or it isn't important, those other opportunities out there for you as a family, then it's the relationship. It's the long-term relationship that's important, and it does not have to be marriage. I want to caution people, when the marriage rates change, or when they decrease for the millennials, that does not mean that individuals do not have the same perspective on wanting, needing, and desiring those long-term, happy, healthy relationships. It's that they're still having that. They're not fleeing from intimacy. It's that they're choosing to have marriage later. And we see that in the statistics, that the average age of marriage is increasing, or they're choosing to make sure that this long-term relationship is important and the one, or they're choosing a long-term relationship, just not marriage.
Do you think marriage is changing, though? Or people are taking a different approach or attitude to it? Oprah didn't get married.
I think people are realizing that they need to have realistic expectations of marriage. Whereas people, and I see this in my students as well. I mean, I've been teaching university students, undergraduate students for almost 3 decades now, Lisa. And when I used to ask my students, you know, 30, 20 years ago, even 10 years ago, what do you want in a partner, a marital partner, or a long-term relationship partner? Students would say, I want the best father, the best partner, the best friend, the best lover, the best provider. They have these unrealistic expectations. Now when I ask my university undergraduate students, and most, but not all of these students are 18 to 21, but not all, they say things that are different. They say realistic expectations. They don't say, I want it all. I want somebody to spend all my time with. I want my best friend and my only friend. They have realistic expectations about themselves, that there is going to be the importance of me time, of time with my own friends and my own self-interests and me alone. They have realistic, more realistic, not totally realistic, by the way, I shouldn't say that, more realistic expectations of what they want and need in a partner. And I think they're realistic about trying to understand themselves first. I mean, the divorce rate has decreased in the United States, and that has nothing to do with age of marriage or the decrease in marriage rates. The divorce rate has decreased. So what I read into that, Lisa, is that people are waiting until they know themselves better and they have more realistic expectations of what they as an individual need in a long-term partner or a marital partner.
Again, a lovely thought, or perhaps they just can't afford it.
That is true, too. That is true, and people are waiting longer both to get married and not getting divorced because of financial issues.
Right. Well, I mean, that's what this is show and I am all about these days, is learning to know yourself and loving yourself and empowering yourself and realizing that life is short and making major decisions based on realistic expectations. And I think you've helped us so much here today. We're down to the last few minutes here. I do have one question. Do you believe in soulmates?
I do not, Lisa.
No, I agree with you.
I do not believe in soulmates. I believe in right partners and right people for you. But a soulmate to me means that it's destined and that there's only one out there. And I think it's the right time and the right person that makes a good relationship. And as you said, knowing yourself well.
Mm-hmm. And tell us about what you have 5 books now. Can you want to tell us about the books in case we want to find them?
Yes, I have 2 wonderful books that I want to advertise for the public. The first one is for couples who want to take their relationship to the next level. They're okay, good, or great, but they want to be exceptional. And this can be non-marital or marital relationships. It's called 5 Simple Steps to Take Your Marriage from Good to Great. And the second book is for people who are single and people who are divorced, widowed, or just haven't found that someone special. And it's called Finding Love Again, 6 Simple Steps to a New and Happy Relationship. And both books are based on my long-term research project funded by the National Institutes of Health. So it's based on science, and my advice is always based on science. But it's easy to read and easy to incorporate into your relationship. And then my DVD as well is called Secrets from the Love Doctor, and it's based on my PBS television special as well as some, you know, bonus 20 minutes. And so if you don't like to read the advice, you can watch the advice.
And, of course, this interview will be archived on BodyMindSpiritRadio.com. And tell your friends, I think you've given us such great advice, good for anyone of any age. And Dr. Terry Orbach, the Love Doctor, do you have a website, too, if people want to connect, or you do speaking engagements as well?
I do speaking engagements as well. Everything is on my website, which is Dr. Terry, D-R-T-E-R-R-I, thelovedoctor.com. That's all one word, Lisa. Dr. Terry, thelovedoctor.com.
I appreciate you joining us. I know I learned a lot, and I think we've helped a lot of people today. And best of luck, and I'm sure we'll be seeing you around in the future.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you, Dr. Terry Orbach. She's known as the Love Doctor, and she's in the Detroit area. She's a professor and researcher and a scientist, and I think she has some great advice for us here. I mean, I'm all about love, and I'm all about laughter, and relationships aren't easy, and we talked a lot about perspective. I think perspective is a big thing, and respect, and men and women, how they're different, and communicate differently with each other, and women just want to know he has our back, and we want him to listen to us, but we don't want him to fix it, and men need to know that women need to know that men don't really want to talk about it, even though you want to. And I think Dr. Orbach, the love doctor, pointed out something really important about men, is that they don't get the affirmations that we as women get out in the world. So when you wake up in the morning, tell your partner that you something special about them and something that you notice about them, and that will make for a better relationship. I, too, am available to speak at your function or share some love with you. You can email me anytime at lisaloveberry, B-A-R-R-Y, at gmail.com. Hopefully we've empowered you with some helpful information today. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to connecting with you again next week. Again, you can hear this interview and any other interview I've done. I've got some good ones up there, bodymindspiritradio.com, and I hope to be connecting with you again soon.